This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, Tick Maynard will be back with another in his series on equine behaviour. But first, Max Corcoran joins me now to talk about the presentation that she gave at last year's annual meeting on alternative therapies. Max, welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, this was obviously a very broad topic. So how did you first of all tackle it? Because there are so many different modalities as well, aren't there?
Well, there is. When I sat down to actually begin putting all this huge presentation together, I was trying to put it on a PowerPoint, and I got a little bit overwhelmed, I'll be honest, because it's something that, you know, I'm a bit passionate about, learning all these different therapies and stuff, but when you get down to it, there's so many things out there that it actually really got confusing, so I had to keep breaking it down and breaking it down and breaking it down to many smaller subtitles, so... But it was very interesting to put it together, so it was quite fun.
And I think you wanted to, you know, start really from the beginning, not let people just look at the symptoms that are being presented, but why they're being presented before they make those informed choices about the alternative therapies that are available for each individual case.
Yes, exactly. I mean, one thing we need to do in this country, because we're such a country of instant gratification, we need to step back and think more about why our horses might need these therapies. I mean, obviously, horses, these athletes, these event horses, they're athletes as we are, you know, riding them or a soccer player or a tennis player. And so, yes, horses get sore from just everyday work. But to sort of step back and look at your program, make sure your shoeing's correct, make sure that your saddle fits correct, and all these other little minor things to figure out, you know, why your horse might need some help. Not every horse necessarily needs all these things that we try to do. We end up spending so much money. But, you know, everyone says, oh, my horse has a sore back, so I need to do something about it. Well, you know, not necessarily, you know, of course, there's going to be some modalities that will help these horses' backs. But let's find out why the horse has a sore back. Is it sore because it's got kissing spine? Or is it sore because the saddle doesn't fit? Is it sore because it's been being worked incorrectly? It's to actually get people to think, I would love for people to think more globally about why it's sore. You know, is it sore on one side because you personally like to go to the left more than go to the right, you know, and then to balance the direction. And also to look at yourself as a rider to make sure that you're not one-sided, because everybody's got a strong side and a weak side. And if someone sits heavier on the left side, then the left side of the horse's back is going to be sore. So to sort of take all those things into effect, you know, into account before you go ahead and actually start using these different modalities.
And of course, marketing trends, they will influence decisions as well. You know, we see someone else using a certain modality and we think, oh, well, that's the one of the, you know, the fashion of the day. There's that aspect as well, that influence. But in terms of the choices out there, Max, what's currently being used on a broad scale, I would say, you know, because there are so many, would you be able to list those and what those options are?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's, Chris, I broke it down into sort of two major groups for what I would call proactive therapies, which is therapies to keep your horse feeling well, not the reactive after your horse has been injured. And the way I broke that down, I said that there's manual therapies and then there's machine therapies. And the manual therapies being acupuncture, chiropractic, and massage therapy. And those have been tried and tested for years, and they are fantastic. I mean, everybody, they have lasted almost the longest of all therapies. But in saying that, to make sure that you have the right people doing the work on your horse, there's no certification for any of these manual therapies. So to make sure that the right people are the ones working on your horses, it's word of mouth, it's asking around, it's that type of thing to make sure it's the right people. And also, too, acupuncture, I'll just say this real quick, not all horses can tolerate acupuncture. It's a very specific thing per horse, just like people. And then in, you know, the machine therapy is another one that's worked, that has been around forever, and they just keep making new ones, is the magnetic therapy, the pulse magnetic therapy, the magnetic blankets that people see on these horses a lot. And it's, you know, research over the years has shown that to be very effective for muscle soreness, for to use before. And a lot of people don't think about it is to actually use it after the horses have worked to help with the lactic acid buildup. So those for sure have been the sort of tried, true, and tested ones that I, from what I can tell and from talking to different veterinarians and physical therapists to, you know, for these horses, for sure. So, and you know, there's new ones that keep coming out. There's, you know, there's the Cytowave, and then there's the MagnaWave, and there's some of these other types of magnetic therapies that have different pulses and all these other kind of things. And I can't say that the physios that I've been speaking to per se have had anything that is to them is the be all and end all, the cure all for any of these situations, you know, the backs and stuff like that. So it's just a bit interesting speaking to these people about that. Well, the other one I will say that's been around for a while too are lasers, which yes. can be used for both proactive and reactive, and it's safe and it's easy to use.
Right, yeah. Well, I think importantly, Max, we need to obviously look at those therapies that are available over the counter and that consumers are buying now because, you know, that they've got advice, they've seen trends, and, you know, people have encouraged them to use them, they go out and buy them. But the important, and I think that's probably more in the case in this country than in some other countries, what's available in terms of these alternative therapies. But I just want to address, if you would, the importance of maybe consulting the veterinarian first before you start on any of these, before you make those choices. What's your take on that?
Absolutely, Chris. I mean, it's, again, back to the whole thing about, you know, why does your horse have a sore back? You know, let your veterinarian be the one to sort of tell you why it's sore. And then, you know, sometimes you can easily alleviate those problems without having to buy the $7,000 magnetic blanket. you know, maybe it's just your saddle fit. Maybe your horse does have tip incline and you need to help with it as well. But, you know, just to find out the reason, not necessarily the effects of it. You know, sore backs are sore backs. A lot of horses have them from work, but again, to find out why it's sore, that's the important thing. And, you know, your veterinarian, it's funny, in this country, in America, the veterinarians are the people that you typically will tell you, you should try a magnetic blanket, you should do that, and they see our horses very often. Whereas in Europe and in England, you see a lot more really, really well-trained physiotherapists that come to your barn about once a week to work on your horses, and people actually have a tighter relationship with them, and then they will go to tell the vet, hey, this horse is back. I can't help it anymore, or I think you need to have your vet come out and have a look at this horse. It's a very different culturally in Europe than it is in America.
So which way around would you tackle this? I mean, there are some modalities which are pretty harmless. You can help your horse without spending, you know, a gazillion amount of dollars. And there are those things that you really should consult your veterinary surgeon about.
For sure. I mean, a lot of these sort of, you know, bigger machines, the MagnaWaves and stuff like that are used, you know, people that are trained to use these machines will come and use them on your horses and stuff. So, I mean, most of the manual stuff, again, you know, if you have things that you're going to do yourself are not going to be very invasive to your horse. It's the only reason some way these other things are going to be not so good for you is the cost factor. Some of these people that come to do the work on your horses, it gets very, very expensive the right result.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So first stop then is the vet. If you've got anything that you suspect, just take it to the professionals and let them guide you on as to which alternative therapies will work for them. And, you know, as you say, the shockwave, there's a lot of other things that the vet can do too. A lot more vets are actually training themselves in these alternative therapies so they can offer them as well.
Right, most definitely. I mean, a lot of vets I know are now certified to do acupuncture and chiropractic work, which is fantastic. I would trust them more than anybody else to be cracking and banging on my horse's back. So yes, it's nice that these guys are all getting, some of the top sports medicine vets are getting trained to do this. Again, I don't always trust just anybody to come and do, especially chiropractic stuff on my horses. It scares me a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
When they come out with these big ropes and they're pulling and they're twisting and they're moving and and then they say, "Oh yeah, they'll be great now. They'll be totally sound now." And he said, "How can that be? You just sort of, you know, beat on them a little bit, you know." And you know, some of those therapies too to think about is that, you know, the horses can be, if you have a good chiropractor come, the horses can be quite sore for a couple of days while they're trying to get their body sort of back in line. So I always time it to give the horses a couple quiet days after the chiropractor has come, just to make sure that they're not sore. I know when humans go, sometimes you can get quite sore from it.
And we certainly would be very selective as to who manipulates our body, so we should be about the horse.
Exactly. And then also another thing to think about there too, some people like to have a stuff done at a competition, which is not always the best too, because if they're feeling too loose, then it stops their proprioception and it affects their footfall, and they're going to maybe be hypermobile in the way they move their body, which isn't good as well, because they're going to be jumping too hard and moving too big, which is going to put extra stress on their joints they're not ready for.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts to send a message to our members, Max, in terms of, you know, choosing these alternate therapies?
I would find someone you trust that to ask the questions. I would read up on the internet, but make sure you read up not on blogs, because everybody's an expert when it comes to blogs or to, you know, chat rooms and stuff like that. But I've, you know, a lot of research is out there. Some of the AAEP, American Association for Equine Practitioners, has a lot of good information on some of these modalities, which is very interesting. So there's lots to learn, and always new things to learn. Always new things to learn. So just sort of ask questions, have a look, talk to your vet, and make sure it's all part of a good program, not just going to be a cure-all.
Well, great advice, Max. Thank you very much indeed for coming and sharing that with us.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, we're coming now to our training segment this week, and Tick Maynard joins us again to continue the series that we began on the last episode. And again, down the same path about the learning process, Tick, for horses.
Yeah. So today I thought we'd talk a little bit about, you know, what horses like and what motivates horses, as well as what horses don't like, you know, and what scares horses or what makes them feel uncomfortable. So basically, when a horse enters into the world, they're born with sort of an innate idea about what is going to be good and bad out there. You know, horses are, you know, tend to be drawn towards the herd, or they tend to be drawn towards open spaces. They tend to be drawn towards food. When they're young, they like to play. And then as they enter the human's world, as most horses do these days, they then will start to associate human things as being either good or bad, depending on their experiences with them. So most horses tend to start to like people because people give them treats and they give them rubs and they look after them and give them food and water. They tend to like the barn usually. That's usually a place of comfort for most horses, you know, with fresh shavings and with fresh hay and water, and they're not being asked to work in their stall. So that's why a lot of horses are drawn back towards the barn, which most people have felt on a trail ride on one horse or another in their lives if they ride a bit. But basically, on a day-to-day basis, the way that might affect you is that if your horse is scared of something, say you're introducing a horse to somebody holding a whip, or there's a flag flying in the background, or your horse is in the ring and the tractor comes in and they don't like the tractor, or it's another horse, or whatever it is, I think it'll help people if they understand that what they like in terms of those day-to-day things is fairly predictable. So first of all, what they don't like is things that move fast, things that move towards them, things that move erratically, things that are big, and things that are noisy. So you can imagine, you know, a tractor is big and noisy. If it's moving towards them, if it's accelerating or it's erratic, it's going to be more scary. The opposite of that is things that move slowly, things that move away from them, things that move rhythmically, things that are quieter, and smaller things. Right? And another way of saying it is that horses are not scared of predators. What horses are scared of is things that act predatory. So if a horse, you know, I've even seen pictures of this online. You have a herd of horses, you know, and not too far a distance away, you have a lion sleeping. You know, horses aren't scared of that so much as the lion running towards them, or even slinking and accelerating and crouched down you know, and acting in a predatory manner. It's the same thing with people. You know, as you approach a horse, if the horse is skittish, the way you approach them, you know, whether you're accelerating or decelerating, whether you're moving directly towards them or on a slight angle, whether you're moving in a rhythm, you know, all those things are going to affect how scared the horse is going to be of you. And basically that will also affect how you're getting a horse to either habituate to something or sensitize to something. So if you're wanting a horse to move off of your leg, you would increase the rhythm or the strength. And if you're asking a horse to get used to your leg, the rhythm would be quieter and it would decelerate. And that's probably why some horses, you know, get behind the leg or stop reacting to the leg, is because the rider is not willing to increase the amount that they're putting the pressure on. So from there, basically, once you're aware that the horse, are you still there, Chris? Did I lose you?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Sorry. I just wasn't sure if we were still on the air there. Basically, once you're aware of all these things in the horse's life that will either scare them or that they'll like or they'll be indifferent to, one of the rider's main jobs is to be able to have the horse, to basically make the world neutral for the horse, meaning that everything around the horse and its environment isn't going to be a draw for the horse or isn't going to, you know, be something that's scary for the horse and push them away. Because at that point, all it takes is for the rider to influence, you know, the horse's world to go left or right or forwards or backwards or go over jump or go towards a crowd or go or lie down or whatever it is. All it takes is for them to influence just 1 gram. You know, you can imagine the grains of sand in an hourglass. If they were exactly the same number of grains of sand on either side, and all you had to do was shift 1 grain of sand to the other, that's what it should be like to influence your horse. And you can't do that if there's too many other influences in your horse's life. You know, another way of thinking of it is if your horse is completely, you know, confident and trusting and it's not reacting to anything you don't want to, then you could take it in a parade in New York City and you'd have all these things that it had learned not to be afraid of through training and through confidence building exercises like banners and streamers and crowds and traffic and honking and firecrackers, and it would just walk quietly through, you know, with its head relaxed and low and breathing rhythmically. And then just at a moment's notice, you could look up, you could, you know, change your seat position a little bit, maybe just put your leg on just enough to touch the hair on the side of the horse's body, and maybe just give it the quietest kiss or cluck if you want to, and your horse would do this beautiful, you know, uphill engaged walk to canter transition, and you could continue at a relaxed canter. And having an understanding of how these different pressures either scare the horse or, you know, or the horse gets used to them and becomes indifferent is going to help people so much with their training. And you see this a lot with young horses, which I think gives people a more theoretical concept of how to train horses rather than just ride horses. But it will also help, those same ideas will help people at all levels of competition.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense, you know, and I think, you know, we just need to open up our senses to, you know, their reaction and their responses and, you know, just be much more in tune to that, because we learn from it in the process, don't we?
Exactly. We you know, there's a great eulogy to that Ray Hunt wrote to Tom Dorrance, who are two very famous horsemen in the horsemanship world. And he talks about the three most important things on the way to becoming a great horseman. And he says, patience, observation, and humility. And so I think with observation, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of things that are very predictable, but in the end, you know, every horse has its own combination of those things. Every horse is unique, and you got to have experience, and you got to be observant. I totally agree.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed for that. Tick, and you'll be back with more in this series. Lots of great ideas. Just give us some ideas of the topics that you're going to be covering.
Well, I have lots of ideas that I was thinking about. Pretty much all of them to do with sort of animal behavior and behavior, and maybe we could even talk about some of the differences between, you know, horses and dogs or horses and people in one of the topics. we talked a little bit about in one of the previous podcasts about why horses learn. You know, not just skipping ahead to how horses learn, but backing up a step and saying why horses learn. I think it's also interesting, the basis of a lot of horsemanship for people is the attitude with which you approach horses. And there's some writing out there from very famous horsemen like Charles de Comfy, George Morris, Pat Pirelli, Ray Hunt, you know, all Ann Kaczynski, all kinds of people that have written about what sort of attitudes they look for in horses and what sort of attitudes they look for in students and what sort of attitudes they look for in high-level performers. So I sort of collected a few of those quotes, and it might be interesting to talk a little bit about that because everybody has their own priorities, but, I think it's all important, and I think learning about what priorities other people have might sort of influence your own, which is interesting. And then a final topic that we might do is on anthropomorphism, which means giving human characteristics to other animals or other things. And there's been quite a bit of debate about this in some circles on whether that's good or bad. And I think we could talk a little bit about that and also about how people apply anthropomorphism to horses.
Very appropriate. Okay, Tick. Well, we look forward to all of that. So thank you very much indeed for coming back on the program. And until the next time, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
And that's it for this week's program. Don't forget you can keep up with all the news on the website at useventing.com and also through our social media channels. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world and enjoy your eventing.